Hello and welcome to Spotlight on Asia on Radio France International. I'm Roslyn Hyams. Chinese Premier Li Keqiang's trip was a landmark occasion where China came to a major European and Western power and commented on very many regionally and globally important issues. It seems to be a sign that China's taking its role as a world power very seriously. Li also took in Belgium before arriving in France and the 17th Euro-China summit. The EU is China's biggest trading partner, and China is the EU's second largest. Of course, Europe's major economies are all prospective members of the Beijing-led Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, so there's mutual wooing going on. Li and his delegation signed over 50 deals worth billions of euros on their three-day visit to France. At Airbus alone, a Chinese company placed an order for 45 A330s with an option for 30 more in a deal worth billions. Crowning his visit to France in Toulouse in southwest France, Li visited the headquarters of European aerospace giant Airbus on Thursday. Paris is seeking a rebalance of trade between the two countries, as are many European countries. In 2013, Paris ran a 26 billion euro deficit with China.
发表了热情洋溢的致辞，回顾了中国和OECD组织20年来。
That's Li becoming the first Chinese leader to address the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development based in Paris. On the second day of his red carpet visit to France, he said China could also work with other Western countries to create growth in developing countries. Indeed, wasting no time at all, he also signed with France what Paris called an historic deal to work together in emerging economies in Africa and Asia. Handshaking and money signs aside, the visit also enabled Li to make a praiseworthy statement ahead of the climate change conference to be held in Paris in December this year about China's targets to reduce carbon emissions and to explain that Beijing would prefer Greece stays in the Eurozone. They also agreed to work together in the civil nuclear industry. And Li's action-packed 3 days provided the perfect opportunity for mending small offences than trade imbalances, but equally important for national pride. China recognised Bordeaux as a legally protected brand in a bid to combat counterfeit wines after 4 years of wrangling with France, who wasn't prepared to give in. Meanwhile, at home in Beijing, the National People's Congress were very much concerned with domestic matters. Midweek, the NPC passed a new national security law. Critics of the law have said, as a wide-ranging law, so extensive, it could be excessive and further infringe rights in China. One senior official in China said, however, the national security situation had become increasingly severe and pressure is growing to maintain national sovereignty. One of Beijing's targets with this law is Xinjiang province in the far west of China. It's home to the Uyghur ethnic minority, a Muslim minority, and Beijing says it's fighting terrorism there. But the law also covers the geographical north and south polar regions, the depths of the oceans, outer space, as well as internet. I spoke to Bill Durodier, an international relations expert at Bath University in the UK. He teaches, amongst other things, subjects related to counter-terrorism. He says the critics, to some degree, may be kettles calling the pot black.
A key element of the proposals is to deal with terrorist-related matters within China and possibly externally. And whilst I hear the comments of various critics indicating that the language used is vague, it could be applied to political dissidents and religious minorities, the largest element of criticism appears to have come from the Obama administration in relation to the technological requirements that the law will impose that any internet service provider operating in China has to provide backdoor access to telecommunications to the Chinese government and encryption keys and various other mechanisms that mean that communications aren't totally secure. Now, we have to bear in mind that this comes not long after the Snowden revelations that the US was doing just this within China. So one has to maintain a modicum of balance in this discussion. Otherwise, one could be accused of being hypocritical. I think, in my personal opinion, this falls much more into a dominant climate and culture today where everything that China does is not acceptable, even when we do it ourselves.
Coming back to the Chinese national security law, what does China actually gain from this law internally?
I think there's possibly some slightly intangible effects that few analysts have commented on. One of them is that there's been an ongoing discussion about the introduction of this new law since the end of last year. And the very fact that the Chinese authorities are saying we're discussing the introduction of this new law is itself relatively novel. And it suggests that actually part of its purpose is precisely to get Western players to think more carefully about their relations with China, because really the Chinese government doesn't need to hold a discussion about the introduction of any law. So the fact that it's having these debates is more, I think, playing to the Western gallery than anything else. The other intangible but I think fairly clear effect, and this is part of the Chinese economic strategy, is that they do want to shift away from having a dependency on Microsoft-related software in China towards their own domestic technology, and this would certainly accelerate that.
You're listening to Spotlight on Asia on RFI with me, Roslyn Hyams. As much as China rejects much about the United States, still, it has adopted a form of capitalism which exists in the US. And here it now is Beijing using Washington Security Policy Organization as a model. Joseph Cheung is a retired professor in Hong Kong and former director of the Contemporary China Research Center.
It had a lot to do with the setting up of the National Security Commission, which was decided upon at the end of 2013, when the Chinese leadership wanted something along the lines of a National Security Council, like under the American presidential system, so that the top leader, Xi Jinping, can now better integrate all the domestic agencies and the military to design and implement a more comprehensive national security policy program, including the domestic aspects of the policy program. And following the setting up of the National Security Commission, now comes the National Security Law to give it the foundation as well as the legal for its implementation.
Cheung says that China's definition of security is definitely broadening, but is essentially concerned with anything that concerns security at home.
A good indicator has been the fact that the Chinese authorities have been spending more on maintaining stability within the country than on military expenditure. So it is obvious that there is a large machinery, a large public security apparatus with lots of resources covering the important area of anti-terrorism and the maintenance of domestic security. The Chinese leaders believe that the internet as well as outer space are two important areas where future military superiority will be decided. It is also significant that Xi Jinping himself heads a leadership group covering internet security, which reflects the importance attached to this issue. With regard to Hong Kong, it is also significant that in the recent arguments against granting Hong Kong full democracy and in the election of its future chief executive, national security has been raised as a concern, and the pro-democracy movement activists in the territory have been accused of colluding with Western forces, outside influences, which may constitute a threat to national security in China.
Professor Joseph Cheung in Hong Kong. From me, Roslyn Hyams, until next time, goodbye.